thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Yep.
Here's John Williams.
Wait till you hear this stuff. It's 2:08, and this is John. Thanks for joining us. We're here until 3, Monday through Friday, 1 to 3.
Lord have mercy.
And then on Saturdays from 10 a.m. till noon. Don't forget now, I'm interviewing Teddy Roosevelt on stage at the College of DuPage. And if you've never seen me interview a dead president, I'm telling you, it's believable. Our Teddy Roosevelt is spectacular, and you'll come away warm and humored and wiser. You'll feel good about the presidency in this country, and you'll be a little smarter about what TR's life was like then and what he would do for us today. It'll be a lot of fun. You want tickets? Sure you do. Go to WGNradio.com/events. Go to WGNradio.com/events or call the Mac box office right now. There's still some decent seats. 630-942-4000. You've heard this name, Martin Shkreli, right? Martin Shkreli. He's the pharma bro. In the Washington Post, there's a story by whom? Who wrote this story? By Rene Merle. And it begins, Martin Shkreli got his first taste of Wall Street as an intern for a hedge fund firm started by CNBC personality Jim Cramer. After striking out on his own, he developed a reputation for aggressive tactics. His battles earned him a spot on the Forbes list of 30 under 30. Shkreli's now 34. His attorney calls him a boy genius, but one of Shkreli's most aggressive moves changed that narrative when his chief executive of Turing Pharmaceuticals, he raised the price of Daraprim, a 62-year-old drug primarily used for newborns and HIV patients, from $13.50 to $750 a pill. When critics pounced, the live-out-loud Shkreli did not do his reputation any favors.
If you could rewind the clock a few months, I wonder if you would do anything differently. And the second is, I'd like to know if you think corporate reputation matters.
I probably would have raised the price higher, is probably what I would have done. I think healthcare prices are inelastic. I could have raised it higher and made more profits for our shareholders, which is my primary duty. And again, no one wants to say it. No one's proud of it. But, you know, this is a capitalist society, capitalist system, and capitalist rules. And my investors expect me to maximize profits, not to minimize them or go half or go 70%, but to go to 100%.
And he hasn't changed, by the way. Now, that's not what. So for that, though, he's not on trial. He's actually facing 8 charges that could land him in prison for 8 years. And to talk a little bit about that is Rene Merle, the D.C. reporter with The Washington Post. Hey, Rene, it's John Williams, and you're on WGN Radio in Chicago. I understand you're outside the courthouse. Is that right?
I sure am.
So what's happening today?
Well, we're in the second day of jury selection. So I'm outside the courthouse. There are a lot of news trucks outside. There are more than a dozen reporters who are inside the courthouse right now waiting for a jury to get selected.
I sort of cut your story short there. Just tell us a little bit more about these counts. What's he in trouble for?
He's actually not in trouble, as some people seem to think, for raising drug prices. The federal government is accusing him of a Ponzi-like scheme, saying that he took money from his hedge funds and from his hedge fund investors to fund other things, basically that he committed a sort of fraud. So when he would lose money with one hedge fund, he would raise money with another hedge fund and use that money to pay back his former investors. It was basically a Ponzi scheme, according to the government, where he wasn't acknowledging when he had losses and just raising more money from investors to keep up appearances.
It's kind of what Bernie Madoff did, isn't it?
In a way, it is. A much smaller scale, but yes.
So he was doing that. What evidence did they have? I mean, we all know him for being this brash and brilliant businessman. How did this come up?
Well, in a lot of cases, what the government's evidence shows is that, on one hand, he was saying to the public, to his investors, that my hedge fund is doing very well. We have, you know, this, you know, $10 million in assets, and we had these type of returns, when the reality, what the numbers actually showed internally, was very different. So what the reality that the he was showing was different from what was going on internally. And that's basically what the government is arguing.
Did they have somebody on the inside that tipped them? I mean, I wonder how this evidence came to light.
I believe that he was not because... unrelated again to his raising drug prices. His attorney has also been charged. It's unclear to me how they heard about this, but when a company is like a hedge funds like his make big bets, the SEC and regulators often monitor that, so they might have noticed some discrepancies.
You almost wonder if he were more popular, if instead of raising the $15 life-saving drug to $750, he had done the reverse. You wonder if there'd be this sort of critical scrutiny of him, you know? It almost feels like payback.
Well, if there is payback, it's coming in the form of them trying to form a jury now. I've never seen it this way. They've already interviewed more than 200 potential jurors, and a couple of dozen of them have been dismissed because they say they can't be impartial. They call him evil. They call him a serpent. They say he's just out for himself and that they can't be impartial towards him. So he's, you know, known by some people as the most hated man in America, and that's making it hard for him to find an unbiased jury. And of course, his attorney is really upset about that.
Upset that they can't find an unbiased jury, or upset that he won't stay off social media? He's sort of shooting himself in the foot lately, isn't he?
He is, and actually his attorney is upset about that as well. It's actually been very interesting to watch his attorney on one hand say, you know, you can't, for example, take everything that he said on Twitter or Facebook literally. For example, recently his attorney asked that his bail be reduced. He has a bail of about $5 million. They wanted it reduced to $2 million. And the prosecutor said, why should it be reduced? He's been bragging on social media about buying a Picasso, buying all this new technology. He has plenty of money. He should just sell those things if he needs, you know, money to pay his taxes or to pay his attorneys. And his Shkreli's attorney's response was, well, you can't believe everything he says on social media. There's obviously this friction there where his attorney has been really stressing that he needs to stay quiet, and Shkreli has really struggled to do that.
Gosh, where have we heard of some other high-profile person whose associates are saying, don't believe everything they say on social media? I can't remember now. Anyway, it's funny. In your story, you say in May, he pledged on Facebook to pay $100,000 for tips leading to the arrest of the person who killed former Democratic National Committee employee Seth Rich. I mean, really, if this is, A, that's just kind of crazy, but also probably not good posture for somebody who's facing these sorts of charges down the road.
Exactly. So, you know, of course, that death was a part of a conspiracy theory in the conservative alt-right press for quite a while, and very hurtful to that family. And also, yes, the prosecutors pointed to that as well, and said if he can afford to be pledging money here and there for random things, obviously he can afford his bail.
Will he take the stand?
It's unclear at this point. His attorney has said that maybe. Their defense basically is that despite, you know, while they don't acknowledge any fraud, they say none of his investors lost money. So, you know, whatever he might have done, they say, his investors didn't lose money, therefore he's not guilty, is their basic argument. So it's unclear to me at this point whether he will testify. His attorney hasn't said. He said maybe. But for Shkreli, his personality, it almost feels like he would want to testify, but I'm not sure his attorney would think it would be a smart move.
That's an interesting notion that maybe he did something illegal, maybe he didn't, but nobody lost money. I can't imagine they would say, yeah, it was a Ponzi scheme, but he was good at it, so can we go now? That's not generally how it works.
That's what prosecutors are saying. Fraud can't be defended by saying that nobody lost money. It's still a fraud.
What is, just give me a moment and then I'll let you go. I can tell that you're outdoors and we sure appreciate your time today, Renee. But can you talk a little bit more about his personality? Who is this kid?
So this is a guy from Brooklyn. He born to immigrant parents. His parents are from Albania and Croatia. Really working class family. And, you know, I've seen his father in the back of the courtroom a couple of times. You could tell they're close. He developed an early interest in the markets and biotech stocks. When he interned at that firm started by Jim Cramer, he was just 19 years old. So he's always been a little bit of an out loud type of guy. So most hedge fund managers stay pretty quiet. They're pretty restrained. He took the opposite approach. And so he's always been somebody who was out on Twitter when he was, do something called shorting, basically betting that a company's stock price would fall. He wouldn't just short the stock, that he would just go on Twitter and start berating the company. So he's always been a very aggressive, out there guy. But it was enough to, make him a millionaire many times over. His stake in one company right now is currently valued at about $50 million. So he was very good at it. He's very wealthy. And he, even made Forbes' list of 30 under 30, meaning that he was one of the most high-profile young people on Wall Street. He is somebody who in some ways doesn't fit in Wall Street because he's not like a Harvard MBA, but he certainly had impact, just because his strategy was very different from other people and he wasn't afraid to speak.
So this may have been a fraud. We'll let the jury figure that out. But he wasn't. He was legit. He's brilliant. He's brash. He's made money. Can you just then lastly talk a little bit about this Daraprim thing, even though that's not for what he's on trial here? It's what he's best known for. Tell me a little bit about that story.
So this all happened at a time when, during the election, the 2016 election, the issue of drug prices became a really big thing. Everybody remembers when Milan upped the price of the EpiPen. At the same time, it came out that Daraprim, it's a very, not a well-known drug, it's pretty obscure. It's been around for more than 60 years, and it's used for people who have a weak immune system, children or people with HIV. He bought his company bought the drug for about $50 million and then commenced to immediately raise the price drastically. $15 to $700. And he said that, that's what his job is to maximize taxpayer or his shareholders' profits, not taxpayers' profits, shareholders' profits. This was part of a bigger trend of what was going on, and it happened during the election. Bernie Sanders weighed in on him. Trump weighed in. Hillary Clinton weighed in. After he was indicted, Shkreli was actually called to testify before Congress when they were holding hearings on the issue of rising drug prices. He took the fifth and didn't talk, but he gained notoriety during a time when what he was doing was suddenly in the spotlight. He's not the only executive who was out there doing this, but unlike others, he was very unabashed about it. He didn't take a step back or try. He seemed to not be able to be shamed by it.
Yeah, no kidding. He was not apologetic. In fact, that little clip I just played where he says, "Yeah, I did it, and I probably should have raised the price even more because, he's a little bit of a Gordon Gekko, isn't he?" That's it, right? I mean, you don't have to read around that. That's his posture, and he stands by that,
yeah.
Right?
He stands by it, and I bet if you asked him now, he would still say that he did the right thing.
Yeah.
He's never really backed down from that.
Yeah.
He just feels like it was a good business decision.
I just want to grab him by the scruff of his collar and say, "Well, listen here, fella. Listen here, smarty pants. So you said it could be $750 or whatever you want to raise the price to, but guess what that did? It hurt your company. It made a market for your competition. That sort of brash greed isn't always best for the shareholders. And by the way, always doing what's best for the shareholders and not the employees or the patients or the customers is something that I think the narrative is shifting on these days. More and more people are starting to say that maybe the first consideration should not be shareholder values. And so maybe you're wrong, and I'm still shaking him by the scruff of his collar, you understand.
Well, there is a greater sense that the public reputation of a company should be important. He didn't seem to think that that mattered. Like he said, that there's always going to be a market for this drug. People need it. But there is this kind of change that's happened in recent years where perhaps the bad publicity is not worth increasing the price.
Well, if you said, okay, hey, John, do you want to invest in this company? I'll go, yeah. Is it a good company? Go, yeah. They're making a lot of money. And then you told me the company it is that's charging HIV patients and newborns this is the company that's killing them financially. Would you want to invest in that? I would say no. I'll take my chances on Google or some other stock. I don't want to be part of that.
Yeah. Well, not everybody thinks that way, which is what
on. Yeah, well, that's just me. I haven't actually come to that line, but I'm sure I wouldn't cross it. It's 2:23. All right, so Renee, you're following the jury selection process. I'll let you get back into the courtroom there, and let's maybe visit again down the road here and see how this story goes.
I'll be here. Thanks so much.
That's Renee Merle. She writes for Washington Post, and she's following the story of PharmaBro. That's the headline. Martin Shkreli goes on trial where he finds another kind of limelight. 2:23, this is WGN.